Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And it passes without comment.
I guess I'll welcome myself back then.
Oh yeah, welcome back, Wayne.
Yeah, but really, Chris can't talk about you bailing on the last episode because he bailed on our movie trip to Godzilla.
Well, hey, at least I'm here for what's important—the episode.
Oh, yeah. All right, fair enough. I was going to say I couldn't say anything about Chris bailing on Godzilla since I bailed on the last two episodes.
And you guys are the two-hour bails. Oh, 2 hours before, plenty of time to bail on this. So Wayne and I went to see Godzilla without Chris.
And I did not.
Right.
I had a good excuse, though.
And our plan, as thought by Wayne, was to bring in our own food and drinks and for the drinks to be alcoholic because we thought it would be a bad movie. And that would make it, that would ease the pain. Why we were paying for this pain, I don't know.
Right.
So
it actually kind of worked.
I don't know. Did you even drink more
I
than
did.
One beer?
No, I drank those two beers, and I am...
Two? Jeez, I am were you able to walk?
I am sure they vastly improved the movie.
Yeah, I did the bring a bottle of whiskey and buy one of their jumbo Cokes. And then did that. And I think there's a reason why you don't drink whiskey through a straw.
Right.
So, yeah, it was, and then it was really dark, and I'm trying to mix it in the theater.
Well,
so.
Like, the funny thing was, like, we brought in sandwiches, right? And don't put sauce on or dressing on your sandwich, because then it gets all messy. But
it's not like you brought a buffet.
I know it does, doesn't it? Well, hey, it's Japan, so they don't check the bags. But, yeah, like, it was funny, like, the screen was really big, which I liked, but that meant everything was really bright, so I felt very conspicuous of trying to eat this sandwich in this theater, because, yeah.
It was a nice scene. I think I'll try to mix my drink now. It'd be like you pour some in and then taste it, and you're like, okay, pour some more in, taste it. Yeah, and the sandwich was, one reason you didn't want sauce on, because I was like all crouched down in my my seat, so it was pretty much on my chest.
Yeah.
So I'm like flicking off lettuce. And Wayne got us really good seats, smack in the middle. But there weren't many people in the theater. And then this couple, they buy the seats right next to mine. So I didn't feel bad.
Because they knew it was you when they were buying the tickets, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, no, wouldn't you like at least... Oh, because you can see where what seats are taken. And they
right.
go, oh, those are taken. Okay, I'll get the ones right next to them and ignore the five empty ones to the...
Hey, you know what? I don't blame them. I like to be as close to the middle as possible. And if that means I have to sit next to a stranger, then I'll do it.
But what if you're going to be annoying that stranger while he eats his ill-begotten goods?
If I was the one being annoyed, then I would... You know, say something to the person eating the sandwich next to me. If I'm eating the sandwich, then, you know, tough luck. That's your whole problem.
We got our revenge with Jersey Allen, who doesn't know how to whisper.
Yeah, neither do you at the end. Wow, he doesn't know how to whisper, does he? Like, you didn't whisper that either. Good job. I don't think you saw it, but we got the stink guy from the guy in front of us.
Because I didn't get the stink eye. Because I was.
Oh, all right, fine. I see how it is. All right.
So, what did you think of the movie, Wayne?
Thank you. Finally.
Sorry. You know what? I enjoyed it more than Pacific Rim, which isn't saying much because I hated Pacific Rim. It was a bad good movie. No, that came out wrong.
A good bad movie.
Yeah. Good bad movie. So I enjoyed watching it. Kind of. Didn't really have to make sense. It's just a big kind of monster crushing stuff. So, although I could have dealt with a little more of that.
Yeah, I'm the opposite of most people probably, where I enjoy the buildup in these disaster movies because I usually find the climax pretty unsatisfying. But I liked, you know, assembling, finding out things. So the fact that it took a long time to see Godzilla or to see Godzilla in action, it was fine by me. Because I figured it would just be like him crashing through buildings, which may or may not be spectacular.
Yeah.
But I liked the movie, even though I didn't particularly like any of the character or most of the characters in the movie.
Right.
Like the son was pretty boring.
Yeah.
There were some laughable aspects in the movie, but there were certain points where they had a character ask a question that clearly the audience was asking.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Along the lines of, "Oh, why didn't you kill it way back when?"
Right.
Or, and they had a reasonable answer.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, what are you doing? Yeah, why didn't you kill it back then? That kind of stuff. So, yeah, that was good.
So no kaiju-sized plot holes like Pacific Rim?
It's certainly not like not like Pacific Rim. I mean, there were some things where you laughed out loud, something like, let's get closer to Godzilla, and they're practically right on top of him or something like that. Like, they're following Godzilla, but they're making it sound like they're following him at a distance, but the scene that we just saw, they were almost on top of him.
Right.
Mm.
And you're like, well, you can't... You might as well just, like, get on his back.
Well, it was almost a little bit of the opposite, at least for me in one thing, where in Pacific Rim, yeah, there were these giant holes where you're just like, oh, come on, you know, you couldn't have set this up, like, a few words of dialogue, like, a half hour or 15 minutes before would have closed that plot hole.
Mm-hmm.
At least for the chainsword thing. But
I was thinking the exact same
thing. Exactly. But Godzilla was a little bit different, where we're told something at the beginning of the movie. And we're told it in such a way where you're like, this is definitely going to matter later in the movie, kind of towards the end. And, you know, not in kind of a, you know, subtle way. And you're just like, well, I see where this is going. And, yeah, it certainly did. So it didn't ruin the movie, but I don't know. Kind of the two extremes, you know, no telegraphing, you know, and a massive plot hole as a result, or, or telegraph. And... you know, kind of go, oh, yeah, well, duh, when you get to it at the end. So
it's hard to say because, of course, since I didn't see it. But, I mean, if you telegraph well, then that only adds to the movie. You kind of start foreshadowing or building audience anticipation or suspense. So, but maybe they didn't do that well.
It wasn't terrible, but it was a bit too much for me.
Oh, and a lot of it is set in Japan.
Oh,
so okay. It does move to first Hawaii and then to... the mainland, United States, but it starts off in Japan, so that was nice to see.
Cool.
Oh, wait, one funny scene in Godzilla. It doesn't ruin anything for anybody, but the main character ends up with this Japanese boy who can't speak English, but apparently understands everything he says. So he's, as the man keeps speaking to him, he starts to absorb English. And starts to like, oh yeah, is that what we're going to do now? But the boy is separated from his parents, and the parents see that it's going to be with this guy, and he's trying to reassure them through a window of a train, right? So they can see who he's with. And then at the end, they get reunited with the son and obviously see, oh, the guy that was with him in the beginning obviously protected him.
Right.
And he's not just a random stranger who picked up our son 1 minute ago, right? He was there through the whole time. And they don't even give him a second look. They don't say anything. They just take the son and then walk away. And you're like, what?
Yeah, not even a thank you.
They don't even turn around and wave or anything like that. You know?
Yeah, you're just like, man, ungrateful.
Just like, when? But... anyway. But no, it's a good movie. I recommend it. Do you have to see it on the big screen?
No.
No, not necessarily. Some of the scenes were pretty good, and the special effects were definitely really good, but nothing really blew me away as where I was like, wow, I'm really glad I'm seeing this on the big screen so I can really take it all in. Same with the sound, which is another a thing that a theater can add to. So certainly, so people that haven't seen the theater, don't feel bad. You can.
Everybody's seen it now since Japan is the last country to get the movie.
Yeah, I think he was talking to me, and thank you.
All right. And that brings us to today's episode, which is our next installment of our Creature Feature series, and this installment is about kaiju.
Yeah. For anybody out there who is extra pedantic like myself, kaiju actually translates to monster or a strange creature. So technically vampires or werewolves or something like that could fit into the definition. But we're going to go with the definition that's kind of caught on in popular culture, even here in Japan, where kaiju equals giant monster. So,
although there is the Japanese word daikaiju just means like big kaiju. Or,
yep. Right.
But we're going with kaiju. And people unfamiliar with creature features, what we'd like to do in these episodes is first talk about how the creature is portrayed in legends and media, and then we go on to discussing how to play them as antagonists and how to play them as protagonists. So a pretty big challenge. Whoa.
Whoa, yeah.
I didn't even plan that.
Sure you didn't.
A protagonist that is 50 stories tall.
You win everything.
All right. And we had some debate about whether or not we were even going to bother with the legend part because kaijus are so associated with 20th century cinema.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially, although they do appear in other things, which we'll talk about. But we decided that there are some classic examples in legend that are really appropriate, not only in the fact that they're very big, but also in the role that they play within the stories and within the myths.
Yeah, of course, one of the first ones that sprung to mind was Leviathan and Behemoth from, obviously, you know, the Old Testament. So, yeah.
The Kraken as well, and Typhoon.
or Typhon.
Typhon, sorry, running gag from before the episode. My bad.
Yeah, no, you say Typhoon, and I can't help but think of the, you know, wind.
I'm sorry, but I saw T-Y-P-H-O and my mind said Typhoon, so I clicked on it and said, hey, Typhoon. No.
Anyway, and there's also Jormungandr or the Midgard Serpent, which, I don't know, I did research on Leviathan, and of course, you know, the information that comes up is, you know, it's a giant sea serpent. It's described as being massive in all these different and now archaic ways, and it doesn't. Maybe you can disagree, Lau, because we were talking about this before recording the episode, but I kind of feel it didn't really have that distinct of a role in what it did, Leviathan. At least in the stories I read, it pretty much is just going to get killed, and its skin is going to be used as a tent, and its flesh is going to be used as the feast for everyone when the end of the world arrives. But the stories I read didn't have it participating in the end of the world or destroying anything.
Certain things that I think are appropriate for the kaiju episode, although I do think the serpent from Norse mythology is even more appropriate.
Right, I would
but
agree.
Things like where God made like a male and female and then destroyed the female because he was worried that if they start to multiply, they would destroy the world.
Right.
Which is very similar to the Gamera series, where the main antagonist in that series, the Gao, their big danger is not so much what they individually do, but the fact that they reproduce asexually, so then they would just keep multiplying.
Right. Yeah, I did think that, yeah.
They had that aspect. They had, even though they're providing a tent and the sumptuous buffet that you're going to eat under this tent.
Lots of fish.
It is the end of the world feast or whatever. So the idea of the end of the world, again, not like the serpent where if it lets go of its tail, then that's going to cause the end of the world, and it plays a prominent role in Ragnarok.
Right.
So I probably was a source of inspiration for a lot of the kaiju stories that came in the 20th century. So. And Behemoth, it's sort of like the land equivalent of Leviathan that walks the earth. And then people think, wow, it's really just obviously Leviathan was just their way of trying to explain who these whales are. Because I think in modern Hebrew, that's Leviathan just means whale.
All right. Yeah, I know with Behemoth, they were saying it could have been, a water buffalo, a hippopotamus, or young earth creationists would have said
a
sauropod.
You look at a lot of the older stories, you have dragons and all kinds of different mythologies around the world, and they often play that same kind of role, an enormous beast that just comes with wrath and destruction.
Right.
And I mean, this is not a legend, but it's just prehistory, and the idea, like, before us, things were huge.
Hmm.
And we look at like prehistoric monsters or prehistoric animals, and they're so big, and we look at them, flash forward to the kaiju, and, Godzilla is a primordial alpha predator.
Hmm.
So just huge, because they just made him big back then.
At least for like the Old Testament kind of kaiju, like Behemoth, Leviathan, and the very infrequently mentioned Ziz, which is like this giant bird. The sense I got was they were kind of animalistic metaphors for nature's wrath, or kind of the untamable, kind of all-conquering nature of nature. Here you have this thing that lives in the ocean, and, don't make it angry, because, hey, the sea can be absolutely terrifying in terms of, if you're trying to cross it, or tidal waves, or, all this stuff, and,
And isn't that what a kaijus are?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. We've got Godzilla, Gamera, and Mothra. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
There's your biblical.
Except two of those fly, and well, I guess
Gamera
straddles, so he's a swimming turtle.
Godzilla doesn't fly.
Gamera does.
That's why I said two. Gamera and Mothra.
Yeah.
Gamera is a turtle.
Yeah, who flies?
He puts all of his limbs in, and the shell spins around, and he flies around.
Oh, okay.
You watched like three of those movies. How did you not see that?
Yeah, they're fighting in the air, but it was just...
So they're fighting in the air, but it never occurred to me that Gamera flies.
I see him more as a walking turtle.
Well, he is that
crushes
too.
Cities, but yeah,
falling from the sky when those jets kick out. All right.
Well, Godzilla swims too. But, all right.
Yes, but nobody's claiming that he doesn't.
All right.
Well, obviously, kaiju are just better at multitasking than the Bible. Yeah, actually, the very last scene that I saw in Gamera 3 was Gamera fighting the Gao up in the air. But I was kind of over that movie by then. I was just like, oh, they're up in the air.
I think there's a scene. There's a scene in Gamera Guardian of the Universe where he actually burrows under the ground as well. So he's got like everything covered. Bringing up Godzilla, right? Of course, because we have to talk about him in a kaiju episode.
Well, we've already talked about him.
Yeah, exactly. I think I read that he was the only kaiju who has had sort of multiple roles of force of nature, kind of guardian of a certain area, with kind of like emotions, and you can kind of empathize with him, and also as kind of a more animalistic, almost kind of like evil, giant evil monster. He's kind of
the good guy, the bad guy, and everything in between.
Yeah, exactly. And I read that he was kind of the only kaiju so far to have done that, had those three distinct kind of roles. But again, that kind of made me think of the biblical Leviathan and especially Behemoth, because I think I read that kind of the end of the world, Behemoth actually gets chained and kind of pacified by God, of course, to show how great God is, that he can created this thing that was this force of destruction and then can kind of chain it up and pacify it at his will. But again, that made me think of the kaiju, because they're not always giant engines of destruction.
Hey, that's kind of that's similar to the Typhon story, where Zeus creates it and then fights it and gets beaten by it and then imprisons it. So the gods can shackle the greatest monster in Greek mythology.
Well, this kind of reminds me of Fenris as well from Norse mythology.
Hey, they all remind us of each other.
Right.
Wow, the Greeks and the Norse were not very original. Or the Hebrews. Yeah.
It's almost as if they borrowed from each other.
Yeah, or almost as if there's one primal story every culture tells again and again.
Godzilla's real.
All right.
And just the idea of like a primordial giant beings, that reminded me of H.P. Lovecraft and something like, in particular, like the short story, Call of Cthulhu.
Right.
Where something causes it to awaken, and then it gets hit by a boat.
Kind of like...
Too bad he couldn't fly.
Yeah.
Now that would be...
Despite having wings.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Never see Cthulhu fly, but... Now, I don't know exactly where the distinction between elder god and great old one is, because I don't really think H.P. Lovecraft ever meant his stuff to be, you know, categorized and compartmentalized that way. But they've since kind of been divided into those two things, and they seem to be more the terrestrial, I guess, for lack of a better term, kind of more physical beings, where, you know, the elder gods are just kind of out there in the nothing space of, you know, the cosmic depths. So I could see giant creatures like Cthulhu and Dagon as kaiju.
Yeah, no argument here, for sure.
Yeah, and I think they add an interesting aspect to the kaiju, and that is the idea of worship. So you've got Dagon, the sea, like a sea monster that's worshipped as a god. You've got Cthulhu, who's a great old one, who has cults springing up and worshipping him. The worship drives them mad. And I think that's really important in a kaiju story. And what I said when we were talking about Godzilla is I love the buildup. I love the buildup in a natural disaster movie. I love the buildup in these, you know, summer blockbusters. Because, again, I don't think, you know, if the ending is, you know, like a boat hitting them on the head and driving them back to the bottom of the ocean, you know, that's all you really got in Call of Cthulhu is the buildup. So, and I think any story with a kaiju has to deal a lot with the buildup, because a lot of times you, like, normal characters would be in the background.
Right.
Unless you're playing Mothra. Like, what are you going to do against Godzilla?
Or, hey, unless you're playing Gamera, and you're that little girl who finds that, you know, kind of little charm thing to kind of control Gamera.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a good kaiju story, certainly from a good kaiju movie, is they give something interesting for the human characters to do.
Hmm.
And like Wayne was talking about with that girl that's connected, and they continue that theme in Gamera 3 as well.
Oh, boy. So in Gamera Guardian of the Universe, which I believe was the reboot of the Gamera series in 1995, they find this island where I guess it ends up being Gamera, and they find the kind of these jade charms that look like half of, you know, sort of a yin-yang symbol, and they collect them, and that kind of leads to Gamera being unprisoned a little bit, and one of the main characters' daughters keeps one of these charms, and then ends up having a psychic connection to Gamera, where, you know, if Gamera takes damage, she takes the same, although on a much smaller scale, and much cheesier scale of just red paint kind of going on her face. But she has an empathetic and kind of a psychic connection to Gamera, and she can know where he is and know when he's coming back. And the movie didn't imply that she could kind of control or direct him, but she knew what he was thinking. So,
yeah. And Gamera 3 does something similar, where they have a girl form a link with the thing called Iris, and which is not really a gal, but it's bad.
Okay.
but she has a link, so then she's able to attract it. So there you have a human link to the main antagonist in the story. So that I thought that was good, as well as like discovering it and having that relationship with it. And there's a bit of a revenge here, where she was in Fukuoka, or her family was in Fukuoka, I believe, and that's where Gamera or that's one of the cities Gamera trampled.
Right.
In the first movie.
Right.
So then now she hates Gamera. So when people say, oh, well, Gamera's here to protect us from the Gao, and she's like, well, what about who's to protect us from Gamera?
Right.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And I thought the Gamera movies did a good job of doing the, you know, who watches the Watchmen kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, Godzilla's protecting us, but does he have to crush a city in order to protect us?
Right.
Because, like, what would that monster have done? Oh, he would have crushed a city. Right.
Yeah, right, so... right. But he would have done it intentionally, where Godzilla and Gamera just kind of get knocked off balance into it and use it to break their fall, unfortunately.
Yeah. He would have killed tens of thousands of people. And how many people did Godzilla kill? Tens of thousands?
It's the intent. The intent matters. Not the result, the intent.
Yeah, and just in the movies, they're always like, yeah, yay, Godzilla.
We cheer you, Godzilla, those of us who are left.
Yeah, those of us who are left salute you, yeah.
I saw this movie called Yongari, which is a Korean movie that came out, I believe, a year after the 1998 Godzilla. Trying to catch that non-existent wave. Yeah, I guess they expected a bigger splash. And it is a terrible movie. It's not like, oh, it's so terrible, it's fun. It's just this full stop bad. And the special effects are horrible. And there's one scene where Yongari, I forget if he's good or bad at this point. He changes at some point in the movie. They walk right up to its tail, the people, and going, oh, it's so big. It's so big. And you're like, all he's got to do is move the tail to like an inch. And he's like crushing you. But they're just like standing right. Obviously, it's a green screen. Mm-hmm. And no one bothered to tell the extras. Like, okay, this is how. I want you. You're next to like a 50-meter monster, right? Right. You're curious. Really? We're not scared? No, you're curious. Get up real close to it. Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Off the top of my head, I can't think of worse acting than Yongari.
Wow.
And although the special effects were horrible, the acting was really, really bad.
Worse?
Yeah, it was much worse, much worse.
Wow.
Yeah.
I will not be seeing this movie.
No. It's they of course, they attack it with fighter planes, and it ducks the missiles. So at some point, they think, okay, we'll send our, I think they call them T-Force or J-Force, and it consists of guys with rocket packs.
Yeah, that was weird.
And guns that kind of shoot lasers, not really bullets, not really lasers. They shoot something. And that's supposed to work. Yeah. It's like in all kaiju movies. They use like the regular small arms fire. And it's like...
Nothing happened.
Yeah, small arms aren't working. I repeat, small arms aren't working.
And nobody gets that message ever.
Quick, give them some small arms and jetpacks.
Yeah. Like, retreat, retreat. And there is that certain hopelessness in a kaiju movie where people, they've got to do something even though it's pretty pointless.
Is there? I guess it depends.
It seems
on,
to be in all the movies was they go do it and they fail. And then their next plan is remarkably similar to the first plan.
Yeah, that's just kind of like boneheadedness, where it is just like, yeah, as
but
you said,
but that seems
very
to be
similar.
A pattern in all the in a lot of the kaiju movies.
Well, again, I think it's because, as you said, Lyle, if they did their plan and they're like, small arm fire aren't working, great, okay, let's do some research, let's find this thing that will kill it, and hey, what do you know, it worked, that'd be a pretty short movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. If the character, because eventually in the kaiju movie, they usually end up killing the kaiju. So if they figure out the method that they use right away, then it'd be a bit of a short movie.
Yep.
I know, but you would think that somebody would go, oh, maybe the pistol's not going to work against that. Maybe, right. Like, start big and have that fail. Or maybe the second plan is not remarkably similar to the first plan.
Slightly larger pistols.
How about two? We didn't try that. Yeah. So what are some common themes in like kaiju movies or kaiju stories?
Ooh, giant monster.
Stole it from me, damn it.
I think you mentioned a good one a moment ago, Lyle, that there's a certain feeling of hopelessness is how do we stop this thing and what we're trying just isn't working. Obviously, fear and panic is a big one, usually right when it shows up. A long time after it shows up as well.
Yeah, right when it shows up. Oh, he's just walking right by the city. Oh, relief.
Should we worry? Yeah. I think investigation and discovery is a big part of one, because trying to figure out exactly how to fight against this thing, how to survive against it.
I think another one is the role of government, because it's a big story. Mm. Mm-hmm. So when we scale up a story, we think, well, the government has to get involved somehow.
Right. Yeah, right.
So it's rarely three plucky adventurers on their own. There's three plucky adventurers working within the government apparatus.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though the government is usually wrong.
Yeah. Government. But that's usually how those three plucky adventurers get, pulled in, or scientists get pulled in. It's like, the scientists discover this thing, the government doesn't believe them, giant monster shows up, everybody believes them, the government tries a few things that don't work, and then they get the, main characters involved because, oh, we failed.
Fight.
We need your help. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. But you're right. Because the monster is so big, I would say government would pretty much always have to be involved.
Yeah, the scale is either national or global. So yeah, you got to get the government involved. That's one. And that gets into the what we talked about when we were talking about like of Leviathan or the My God Server. We're talking end of the world type of story, because if this, or at least end of the city or end of the country, the stakes are really high.
Mm-hmm.
Often another theme is that at least some of the heroes are smart, like scientists. That seems to be quite common. Godzilla, you're looking at a couple of smart characters, such as Bryan Cranston's characters, Ken Watanabe's characters. They're like scientists. And Gamera, there's like a bird expert. What's it called?
Right. I forget what her name is, but yeah, bird expert. Even though the Gyaos or whatever they're called aren't birds. Yeah.
Yeah, like in the first movie, she's like, they're not birds. They're not birds. But she stays on.
Yep.
And then at 15 minutes later, she's like, okay, the birds are over here. You know, she just gives up. No, technically they're not. Okay, whatever. All right, birds are attacking Kyushu.
No, but I think another common theme that you see in the kaiju movies is that the kaiju are often very animalistic or bestial. They don't have great intelligence. So intelligence is one of the few ways that humanity is able to best them.
That's one of the things that reminded me of H.P. Lovecraft's creatures. It was, of course, the size, but the fact that they're non-intelligent. They're really powerful, but they don't have the kind of intelligence that we would normally associate with a main villain. Mm-hmm. They have a very prehistoric, reptilian or primordial intelligence. Like, we just can't understand it.
Or alien.
Yeah, all those. Yeah,
H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Because, like, if the result that we as humans are seeing, it, you know, we don't know if it's just operating on a level that we can't understand, whether that be higher or lower than human intelligence. So, yeah, I think that would be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Wayne and I had a mini debate over email over whether the 50-foot woman could be considered a kaiju. And he had a very good argument that probably not, because she is intelligent and she knows about what people do and think and feel. So it kind of takes her out of that, puts her in a different category.
Right. I mean, you kind of think of like giants, right? Like, do giants ever kind of get put in the kaiju category? I mean, technically they could be because they're strange monsters, but, you know, from what kaiju has come to mean, those giant monsters, the giants aren't part of that because they can kind of usually communicate with people.
It's a good point. I technically, I didn't weigh in this debate because I was kind of busy at work.
Or bored.
But yeah, technically I would agree with Wayne in that she wouldn't be a kaiju. But she would fall into, you know, in our episode on giants, we said one of the scariest things about them is they look and act human.
Right.
So when they eat humans, it's like this cannibalism, which is one of the main major taboos. So really play that up. But she could be a nice spin on the kaiju, certainly.
Yeah, the only reason I thought of her mostly was because she came in that whole giant monsters era in the 50s kind of thing. But
I'm sure that was referred to a lot of, like, you know, wow, that's a lot of female flesh. Let's just, let's just scale her up. There you go.
I don't doubt that was a factor.
But good movies that do really well with, we can't understand it, so let's not even bother trying to understand it, is like Cloverfield or the movie Monsters, which has a connection to the new Godzilla, and that's the same director.
Mm-hmm.
And those two movies are probably probably really famous for not focusing on the monster and focusing on the people, so much so that you rarely ever see the monsters. You might see like bits and pieces. And the director of the new Godzilla, he tries to do some of that with Godzilla, and I thought that was some clever camera work, where somebody puts on a gas mask, and then the camera is like looking through that mask to see what he is seeing, to try to, you know, give us that perspective. You know, he's not seeing it from above and getting a perfect shot of the monster. This is what he would see. This is what you would see if you were there.
Yeah.
So, and Cloverfield and Monsters do a great job of, like, this is, sure, his scale is over here, and whatever he's doing it, and all these battles are going on over here. If you were there in the city, this is what you would see.
Right.
This is what your story is. And that's maybe another theme, is that juxtaposition, is that we talked, the scale is so big, so often it's just too big for a small group of people to really be concerned about. This smaller scale is what you're going to be concerned about.
Hmm. Well, you know, I think that's, I almost wanted to bring it up before, but I think there are quite a few pitfalls in telling a kaiju kind of story. In that, number one, you have to present it as being extremely big and powerful, something that the characters can't deal with right away. And also another side to it is that even though it is so big and powerful, there is still only one. So once the characters figure out how to deal with it, it can be over relatively quickly. So you do need to have some kind of challenges that the characters have to overcome that can carry about some pace, because they can't face it one-on-one. It's just going to stomp on them.
Right.
Well, some of the common things you see, like, there is what we mentioned before, like the investigation. You also see a lot of mini-monsters show up in it.
Mm.
Like in the Matthew Broderick Godzilla Shudder, there were little baby Godzillas running around the size of velociraptors.
Cloverfield had it too, the things that fall off it.
Exactly, yeah. The little Cloverfield smite things.
Cloverfield was really cool because you never really figure out whether that was part of the invasion plan or whether it was just kind of, you know, like mites, that fell off this guy that were just such a large scale. And yeah, you brought up the Matthew Broderick Godzilla, because as soon as he said, well, there's only one of them, and I'm like, well, you could go the cheesy, you know, Godzilla route and have it be hermaphroditic and spawn a bunch of kids. So,
yeah.
You know, I think, was it Roland Emmerich? Is that his name? The director of, I think, Independence Day and then the new not the new Godzilla, but the 1998 Godzilla?
Right.
I don't know.
Man, I think he got unnecessarily trashed over that movie.
Godzilla?
I understand that it deviated from the traditional Godzilla, but I think he kind of looked at those movies as kind of crappy B-movies.
Which they are.
And you watch a lot of them. They're not necessarily good movies. And he was like, well, I just want to do my own thing and borrow from a good movie like Jurassic Park and try to do something like Godzilla plus Jurassic Park is going to be the new Godzilla. So
maybe. I don't know. But like Independence Day was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
But it has the same... It's got quirky characters.
Good's debatable. I enjoyed it, but...
Sorry. For me, if I enjoy a movie, I call it good. No. But
ouch.
I can't... You know what? I can't fault that
Chris.
Logic. Okay.
Point Chris.
But I can't really say that with Godzilla. It definitely had some great set pieces, like the bursting through the building, those kinds of scenes. But yeah, I think a lot of the problem was it was Matthew Broderick. It's so boring.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So I'm trying to think of a movie of... Like, I kind of like War Games. He was in that. Sorry, yeah. I don't want to turn this into a Matthew Broderick episode.
Matthew Broderick, right.
Creature feature Matthew Broderick. How do we play him as a protagonist? I don't know. They've been struggling with that his whole career.
Ouch!
Maybe switch to antagonist. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I can't really remember a lot about the 1998 Godzilla, and there was a lot of kaiju movies that I hadn't seen that I wanted to watch prior to this episode, so I didn't go and rewatch any of the ones I had seen.
Right.
But of all the ones that I had seen, like, you know, Cloverfield, remember that. Monsters, really remember that. 1998 Godzilla,
I remember. Yeah. The only thing I remember that is being a terrible.
To me, I remember it as being, it was all right. Wasn't great, but
2000 Godzilla was fun. I remember laughing so much at the very last scene of it, where the doctor says, "And there's a little Godzilla in all of us."
Man. Anyway,
what does that mean?
I don't know.
Was that a setup for the sequel? Is like little Godzilla's burst out of the people?
Like, cross aliens and Godzilla. Jeez.
I think the problem is you didn't watch to the end credits.
Exactly right.
It's like Mom, do you have indigestion? I don't know.
Just a little Godzilla.
Somebody called Matthew Broderick.
Oh, man. The Gameras I watched were dubbed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as bad as the original actors were, I'm sure. Although there was a cameo by Nakama Yukie in Gamera 3. Okay.
Not ringing the bell. Nope.
Okay.
Fun trivia. You know that Young Gary movie?
Yes.
Apparently, the only when the Koreans made it originally, they sent it to America to get a dubbed version of it, but they weren't really familiar with how the whole process worked, so they sent the original print to the U.S. So when the Americans created the dub print version of it, they threw away the film that the Koreans sent them. So the actual real original Korean movie is lost. They only have the English dub version of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeongari.
Yeah.
But they had American actors.
I told you that's a remake of the original one, which was made right after Godzilla in, I think, in the 60s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I watched the 1999.
Yeah, yeah. I think the original name was the name for it was Reptilian, and Yeongari was a subtitle to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but both were horrible, so yeah. You're still on track.
So, oh, and yeah, the voice actors were horrible. I don't know. Should I even finish this point?
I'm sorry. I completely derailed that for you. Smashed it like a kaiju.
What is with you and derailing? Yeah. Just like kaiju.
Trivia for
yeah, just like kaiju. Bringing it back on topic.
Yeah. Oh, that's another theme is bridges and train tracks. Man, they don't like them.
Mm.
Yeah, so you got to have something like that.
Power lines? Yeah.
I think it's obligatory in every kaiju movie that the kaiju has to pick up a train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some sort of bridge that'll crash through and people got to race right. To get off the bridge.
Yep.
All right. Well, since we talked about one of the themes and to pick up on that, where... just the scale and how to work with the scale and how to make them antagonists. Like what Chris was saying is you only got one. So one of the options is to have like mini monsters. So how do you have an effective kaiju antagonist? And one idea is, yeah, have mini monsters.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you just said it. The mini monsters, all right. I guess the other way, or one of the other ways, is, as we said earlier in the episode, is to make it very much like a puzzle, where, mm-hmm. you know, there's a number of pieces and or puzzles that the player characters are going to have to solve in order to, you know, beat this giant kaiju. So it's not as if they are, you know, directly going to fight it. Whatever they piece together through these puzzles and sort of like, you know, sequential challenges are going to allow them to defeat the monster.
Right.
I guess the problem with that, as we've said, is if the players jump to the conclusion that it's going to work really fast, well, then your game's going to be over really fast.
Right. Well, yeah, and you can do different kinds of things. The monster has some kind of vulnerability, and then you can eventually construct a weapon out of that vulnerability. Or it maybe if it has some kind of magical connection, maybe it's some kind of summoned creature from another dimension, you can find some way to unlink that summoning and it returns to its other place.
Right.
Or, yeah, there's you know, 1,001 different rationalizations you can go for. Yeah. But something the characters have to investigate and figure out.
To use the government theme in connection to building something or getting something, one of the things that they could build is building alliances.
Mm. I was just thinking of that too, yeah.
So... yeah, sure, they discover, and it could be quite quickly to discover, oh, the key to killing him is X. But even knowing that X is still difficult to get or difficult right. to make, so now what you have to do is convince, and even though it is a game about a monster rampaging through a city or a country, just like in the movies, a lot of the things that the main characters do is not... on the streets, it's in the laboratories, or mm-hmm. it's in the government offices and
right,
the boardrooms,
right?
And make that sort of like the second act. So the first act is discovery, the second act is building alliances and building, and then the third act then is unleashing it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if like I'm not saying that would be boring, right? But as you said. No, that's not what I meant to say. I'm implying it. But, like, you said that kind of thing takes the characters away from the monsters. They're no longer on the street, you know, for lack of a better term. So I'm wondering if you could kind of do, like, split play, where, I'm sure there's a term for it, where the players would have one set of characters who are, like, the scientists, diplomats, politicians, whatever, and then they could have another set of characters that are the, you know, defense force or army or whatever, and it's not like the army characters are really going to beat the kaiju until they find out this weakness, but that could put a bit more action into the game where, okay, you're the defense force and you have to, you know, make sure enough civilians, or make sure, you know, as many civilians as possible get out of the area of this kaiju, or at least hold it off for people to evacuate. And you could kind of bounce back and forth between, you know, a couple of different sessions between those two focuses.
Yeah, I mean, that could work with this other idea that I had, in that there's different stages of, or different scales in a story. And one story could just be escaping.
Mm. I was you're taking all my ideas.
Oh, okay.
I
just had that one too. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it was this thing that you know, we're talking about the ways that people can figure out how to eventually beat the monster, but maybe there is no way to beat it. Maybe you have, for the third act, you have to focus on how do you get away? How do we get off this planet or off this country? Give it to the monster. Oh, was that what you were thinking?
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, there's one story, if the players are at this power level that is really so beneath the kaiju that there's no point in trying to have them go against the kaiju. But what they could do is try to escape the city or help people escape. Mm-hmm. Using Wayne's idea of, like, different characters, you're playing the family that's escaping. The family of the you have, like, people that are going to be in the second stage, which means they're going to sort of fight the kaiju, but it's more like a delaying action.
Right.
And that could be like the military, the self-defense force. You can have characters as, it could even be the main ones, and that's the first part of the first act is escaping, and then there's discovery.
Hmm.
And then the bigger scale is you can actually somehow affect the kaiju. It could be, you could be like Voltron, you get big and you get, right, you know, make these little machines and you form up into a giant robot or something like that, a la Pacific Rim, a la Voltron.
Or you go giant.
Yeah, or yeah. You're Ultraman, where you can get really big for 8 minutes. And yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to your idea about, you know, playing the family or playing the defense force, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, if you split the game between those two pools of characters, the scientists on the one hand and, you know, the kind of the military people on the other, I was thinking that once the scientists got to the point where they figured out how to beat the kaiju or what weapon they had to use against the kaiju, then you would actually, you know, flip back to the military people and they would be the one who then had to carry out the mission. Because, mm-hmm, you know, that's usually how kaiju movies and stories go. And it would be pretty boring if NPCs kind of carried out the mission after the player characters figured out what you had to do to beat this monster. There's mm-hmm, wouldn't be a lot of investment. Or if you just gave them, you know, new characters, it's like, well, we're only playing these characters, you know, for a session. I think it would be more impactful if they had been playing these characters for a while.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, that unit or that whatever, that group of military guys gets tapped to go deliver the whatever final solution to this monster. Mm-hmm. I think that would be cool.
Well, you could also just have the same characters. So they happen to be brilliant scientists with their family. So step one, help our family escape the city. But then you're like, I can't just leave the city. And, oh, I've got some reservist background.
Right.
And you somehow hook up with the army and they're going to help you fight the way to the government, where you have this idea that you'll share with the government. And then mm-hmm, they're like, do you know how to use this thing? And you're like, yeah, I shot guns when I was a kid or something. You know, mm-hmm, just like in the movies, always, or even in the new Godzilla, the son of the scientist is in the military and he happens mm-hmm to be in a particular branch of the military that, hey, is really helpful in this particular thing.
Right, so that's like, what I was saying with the kind of telegraph.
Can I go with you? And you're like, ever been on a Halo jump? Yeah, sure, why not? Yeah. haven't we all?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
isn't that basic training? That
was the main guy's like, can I go with you? I'm a specialist. And I'm like, well, is anyone going to say no, given his background? He's like, yeah. But if you take a page from that horrible movie, D-Wars, Dragon War, you don't really have to be a super badass reservist or fighter. You can just be a reporter who is the reincarnation of some kind of deity.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah. Or you can just go all riffs and it's just like, I'm the rogue scholar.
Yeah, right. You know, but my armor suit is more powerful than Godzilla's.
I've been hanging out with Cyber Knights and Glitter Boys, you know, since I was a wee child, so I've picked up a few things.
Not and enough besides, to change my class.
Besides, I've got the Glitter Boy next to me, and he'll be taking them out anyway. I've come up with a solution. It's that big gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine a kaiju on the Rift's world. It's like, oops. I picked the wrong world to try to crush.
It's kind of like the aliens from Signs. Whoa, this whole world is hostile and toxic to us. Why did we pick it?
But as an antagonist, that what do you guys think about having an intelligent kaiju or something that, again, this gets into what Chris was talking about when he's putting forth the 50-foot woman as not necessarily a kaiju, but as a possible substitute?
Hmm.
Yeah, well, I thought it might be an interesting thing to look at if you can reason with them. You know, if they're not just these bestial things. I mean, maybe communication might be difficult, but the idea that you can talk to them or maybe convince them to stop attacking.
I mean, the King Kong's ability to communicate with Fay Wray is a big part of the story. I don't think in the three major King Kong movies, I mean, they've taken that part of it away. No. It's always the, beauty, kill the beast. And right. Those helicopters. Right. Those helicopters killed them too.
Yeah.
The fall killed the beast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even as a kid, I kind of wondered why, you know, the original King Kong, after he fell off to the building, I'm like, why is he still intact? I thought he'd be a lot squishier. But anyway.
You're a morbid little kid, dude.
Yeah, then I always wondered, I'm like, how do they get rid of that body? But no, I think if you have
a
reasoning...
You know how they get rid of it? Vultures and crows. It's taking a long time, but you know.
Feast of the last days, man.
Yeah. But anyway, if you have a
help yourself, people.
Oh, jeez.
You know, come the Depression, you guys are going to be wishing you had some of this. Yeah.
Only we'd invented freezers.
Now you know where all the hot dog meat in New York came from.
Still.
Yeah, exactly. Still. There was that much of it. If you have a thinking, reasoning kaiju, then I think the type of story has to change. You can still have it as like the villain, but then you have the option for it to be sympathetic. And then I think it would be harder than as the players to just order its destruction.
I mean, the flip or the ambiguity does play a role. I mean, in Yongari, although it's a horrible, horrible movie, in case I made that clear, starts as an antagonist and then flips to a protagonist. And yes, I don't care that I ruined it for you. Yeah, and it's the thing on his forehead. The guy in the jetpack, he flies right in, kills himself by flying into this thing on the forehead, and the aliens no longer control him. There, I ruined it for y'all. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, but then he becomes a protagonist, so therefore they have to introduce another kaiju for him to fight. Out of the blue. It's just whatever.
Why did they ram another jetpack into that guy's head?
Well, I don't know. Why didn't they have both kaijus rampage the Earth when the idea was just to destroy the Earth? So, like, oh, we'll do the one kaiju. Oh, he's flipped and become good now, so send in the other one.
You know why?
That we've never mentioned.
Because villains always underestimate Earth's defenses.
Yeah.
Do you know the operational cost of a kaiju? Come on, man.
Yeah, okay, you explain to the boss why we're over budget. Oh, you haven't spent any on the special effects. Yeah. Sorry. So it can flip, absolutely. But I think we're seeing like a real range if we put on one spectre the 50-foot woman with like things like King Kong, maybe newer Godzilla, and then on the polar opposite, you're looking at the monsters and you're looking at Cloverfield.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where you don't even bother. But then I guess it gets into not only sympathy or empathy, like Wayne's suggesting, but it also gets into proximity. So in King Kong, you can communicate with it, but you got to get up close to it. So that's a big change in the story if you want to introduce that element. So with the 50-foot woman, although, you know, even if she's 50-foot, she's probably pretty easy to kill.
Well,
I think the movie, how does the movie go beyond like sending the fighter plane to shoot one missile at her?
I don't remember.
Oh, and she's dead.
They don't
dead.
Want to kill her because she's also human.
Oh, was that?
Maybe there's a bit of that. But, like, you're right. Like
with the recent news, I don't think the police or to...
Yeah, it was a more innocent time.
But, you know, you think about it. All you need is it only takes, one square inch of skin worth of nerve gas to kill a person? So one nerve gas grenade will do it?
Yeah. But, I mean, for whatever reason, you want to, the idea is to communicate with it, then you got to get up close to that. And then that becomes the story. How do you get close to it? How do you communicate with it? I actually like that part in Independence Day where they try to communicate with the big saucers and they got that helicopter and they're like, okay, we've configured these lights. And you're like, wow, really? Was that going to work? But
It might have.
I just like that idea. It's like, okay, here's what we figured out how to communicate with it. And, okay, that's pretty cool.
It also comes in the ferocity of it, too, because with Independence Day, they've come over the city and they've just stopped there. So it's kind of, all right, well, we have a little bit of time. Let's see what we can do. Where something with Cloverfield, you know, after the first 6 hours, it's already torn a path of destruction through the city. Let's not try talking to it. Let's just drop them bombs, you know?
Right. No, you mentioned proximity, and you're right. Getting up to this thing to communicate with it or getting close enough to communicate is a major part of the story if you go with the empathetic or, you know, kaiju. But that doing that is really, really dangerous just because of the size of this thing. I'm thinking the 50-foot woman, right? Or some, like, a helpful kaiju, right? Even if it doesn't intend to, just the size makes it dangerous where, you know, one wrong step and buildings are over and people are dead. You know, so I like the inherent danger that is always there, even when you're trying to communicate with a friendly or helpful or non-aggressive kaiju.
Even if you're trying to hurt it.
You
know, it's like, okay, let's point it in the right direction. And that's where you get like the Gamoras and the Godzillas and just the collateral damage that they do. So even planning that, I really enjoy it, like in their games when you have something like, you know, like Chris has a, like a military thing, and then we've got a plan, like, how are we going to fight these guys? And you can map that out. You know, it's not a political thing or anything like that. You're just doing straight-up tactics and strategy. So that can be a lot of fun, and it could just be as simple as getting them from point A to point B with the least amount of damage could be a lot of fun. And with some meaty roles as it goes along to see if they do it, you can do what Wayne mentioned with the Gamera series, where they have a connection to some person, be it through like a little amulet or stone.
Right.
So if somebody figures that out and is like, okay, this is our way to communicate with it.
Now you got to find that person and convince them to help out.
That's even better.
It's like they don't have the person. They figured it out. Where's that person?
Yeah. That's good.
In the North Korean one, Bulgasari, sorry, this is going to be a big spoiler here, the way to kill it in the end is it's brought to life originally with a single drop of blood from one woman. And in the end, they figure out that if they kill the woman, that will also kill the monster. But you could put that as a very sympathetic thing, like maybe even one of the PCs, and they have to self-sacrifice in order to stop it.
No, I'm just thinking in North Korea, and there's no hesitation. Kill it!
Right.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, in that, it becomes, hey, we got to find that person. Which in North Korea leads to a bunch of dead women. You know, everybody's getting slaughtered. But, you know...
We've narrowed it down to these 1,000 women. Okay. Kill them. Okay.
We're talking about leading it. Like, I like how that ties into, like, a larger challenge of us finding a weakness or us finding how to affect it. Because, again, like in the Gamera movie I watched, the things were attracted to, I believe, kind of like a magnetic pulse or something like that, where they could... you know, put enough of this thing that it liked or was attracted to in a sports arena to try and attract it. The Gyaros or whatever it was called, the bad ones.
Yeah, and they used a lot of cows.
Yeah, which looked really, really
sides
fake.
Sides of beef. They looked like frozen sides of beef.
Oh, okay. I thought they looked like plastic, but...
I wonder if it was cheaper to just buy frozen sides of beef.
That's what I was surprised. A tangent. I thought it would have been cheaper just to buy actual meat, which is why I was surprised at how fake they looked. But anyway, I guess the point of it is that what I was saying is that could be, even if it's like a friendly kaiju, as you said, herding it somewhere or finding the thing it's sort of attracted to or the thing that will direct it, it could be part of that little, or the multi-step challenge to end up defeating it.
Yeah. Oh, Godzilla used fish. Piles of fish.
Because it's Japanese.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. No, the 1998 one, the one in New York.
Yeah. But oh, that's right, that's
it's
right.
It's on Manhattan, and the guys are like, he doesn't leave this island. And you're like, what? Why not? He's on Manhattan. Don't you want to go to, like, a less populated island yeah, right. or place? To keep him on the island, you know, with millions and millions of people.
Come on, it's only, like, the highest property value in the world.
Not anymore.
We've got him trapped.
Maybe that's the idea. Maybe they're trying to lower some of those house values.
Yeah, where's this guy from, New Jersey? He's like, yeah. Keep him on the island. Doesn't cross the bridge.
Wow, that sounded incredibly British.
Oh, it was, and it's the revenge of the American Revolution. I don't know. Keep him in America. Anyway, I thought that was...
Actually, you know, you could play that. We were talking about the social one, like making alliances before. Maybe the other countries don't want to interfere because they want this country to be destroyed first.
Yeah. Oh, when Wayne was describing it, where, you know, you talk about the stages, and it's like, okay, we've lowered him here. Now let's think of how to kill him, because we didn't do that first.
Right.
You know, I think that was a part of our, you know, a little flaw in our plan. Probably we should have figured that out first.
Well, I was thinking the two were linked. Yeah.
Or you got two teams, and the other. Yeah, we don't have another day. He's here now. Oh, can he?
Yeah. Step one, lure kaiju to point. Step B, question mark. Step C, win.
Figure out how to go.
Yeah. We didn't mention it, but talking about the size, one of the, I believe it was Scion, in their Ragnarok book, the mm-hmm. idea is you have to deal with the Midgard serpent, mm-hmm. and they said a couple of ways to do it. One of them was the monster is so big that it's essentially a series of locations.
Yeah, yeah.
So us talking about scale and how this thing is like way beyond, you know, human scale, you don't even really get to deal with all of the monster at once. It's just like you're dealing with pieces of it. So at least more, that I guess it'd be more from a mechanical standpoint than a narrative or a fictional one. But that would be one way to do it if you had to deal with mechanics.
Yeah, I saw that in one of the games I was looking at a while ago, Legends of Angelair, where they say if you have really giant monsters, treat them as multiple versions of monsters.
Mm.
And I think they meant specifically in fighting it, you know, first fight the arm and then fight the
right,
other arm
right.
and stuff like that. But yeah, you definitely could take it as multiple pieces at once. And I really like the idea of putting it as a location. Maybe it's so large that it's a location in and of itself.
Yeah, or several, yeah.
I think there's an old D&D module. That might not be that old. Might even be 4E. Regardless, it takes place on the body of a dead god.
Yeah, I remember. I'm drawing a blank, but I think I definitely remember that.
Yeah. That's all I remember.
Now, the bigger challenge is how do you portray them as a protagonist?
Hmm.
Now, we challenge. Talked about like a sympathetic one. But it was something that the protagonist had to deal with. What about as protagonist?
Well, I think there's a few different ways you could go at it. You could have something like in Pacific Rim, not that I'm actually recommending using much from that movie, but where your characters are driving around giant robots. And they can either be fighting other kaiju, or maybe they are just some kind of weapon. Or you could take something out of some of the anime, like Giant Robo, where, or even maybe the Gamera movie, where you have control of the monster via remote control or psychic link or something. But you have to be extraordinarily careful because of the amount of collateral damage that can be caused by them. And that's, and then you also have to deal with that. I mean, maybe you are fighting with, the kaiju, so it's, the most important thing is destroying this monster, and, damage is a secondary thing, but then, dealing with the aftermath of that, you know, you can meet people whose homes you've crushed, even though, you know, it's part of your job.
I think I would do something similar to what you said, Chris, kind of like taking a page from Ultraman or something, where mm-hmm. If you're piloting a giant robot, yeah, okay, then you're on the same scale as a kaiju, but you're still people inside something, right? And the controlling the monster, either through like this little medallion that the girl in Gamera had, seems a bit more like you, the character, are actually the protagonist as a kaiju. Because you have to think about big scale. And I would do something like that, where you can either transform into a giant size, or you can control or have a psychic link to this giant monster.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cthulhu Tech does that. And you can play different types of... like pilots. So there's the ones that pilot what more traditional, like mechs, and then there's ones that are piloting essentially monsters or like bioengineered creatures.
Right.
And there you have more of a not necessarily a battle, but there is that idea of control, like who's really controlling this creature. Mm. But they're able to be bigger in that. So.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Neon Genesis Evangelion. You know, the anime has a lot of the kind of hybrid of, you know, biomechanical, that is a hybrid, you know, giant monster suits where a bunch of times when the pilot passes out, kind of the thing can take over because it is kind of alive. I would like doing that better than just a straightforward mecha pilot thing.
I'd be hard-pressed to think of a better game that has the different ways in which you can do it than Cthulhu Tech. Certainly you could look at something like Rifts where you...
play a dragon and you are a kaiju.
Yeah, I guess you could play a kaiju, but if you look at the New German Republic, so you play the guys that are in the giant suits of the giant robots and fight the gargoyles. So.
Would you ever play as kaiju?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about that. What if you took it as kind of a superhero bent, you know? I mean, Superman easily has the power of a kaiju. He's just normal sized. And you think about if you had that power and the size, you'd still have to deal with, if you were intelligent, you'd still have to deal with the government. You know, maybe they don't want you in the city, even though you are a protector because of how much damage you could cause.
I was thinking about that prior to the episode is, you know, I mean, there's games where you play gods. There's games certainly when you play... may as well be gods, you know, superheroes. But I think the fact that the kaiju are so big that you would almost want to be interacting with other giant things as well. And again, it's the scale thing. I mean, if everything's big, then you're no longer big.
Right.
So the idea of being the kaiju is that you've got to be bigger than everything else. But if you got like a couple of buddies, then you're like, what are you interacting with? Like you have a couple kaiju buddies and you just kind of like do nothing but wait for kaiju antagonists to appear.
Yeah.
And then it's just a gladiator kind of game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like Lyle saying that, I mean, like, what else could you do if your player characters are all kaiju and you have like this kaiju team? Because they are so big, the only problems they're going to be dealing with are other problems that are their scale, other kaiju.
But like you said, with when we talked about Ultraman, is you are a normal scale normally, and we've talked about one way around it, and then you climb into something that's big, or then I guess you just get big. I mean, you're like Giant Man or Goliath or Ultraman, where
I am Kaiju Man.
So you will always face these like big antagonists. But then, you know, I think that might be a I don't know how exciting of a story it would be, but
I think that would get old.
Yeah,
I wonder if you could do it something like those Monster of the Week or Vampire Hunter kind of things, where each different kaiju has a different kind of weakness, different kind of power. So while you have the ability to go up and be big to attack it, you might not know how to beat it. So there is maybe some of the puzzle element in it. I don't know how long it could sustain.
I think that could extend the game. But, you know, like a Monster of the Week style game, we're human size. You're usually human size, and things can be smaller than you or bigger than you. And that kind of adds an extra wrinkle where if you're kaiju size, I mean, it's either going to be something kaiju or like ultra kaiju, which just kind of gets ridiculous.
It's got three heads.
Yeah. Or I was thinking like, wow, we're 50 stories tall. And that thing's 100 stories tall, you know. And
we need to team up.
Yeah.
We can't be... destroying cities, just the two of us. We need to team up to destroy that one. Yeah. A cheat can be, and this is from Gamera the Brave, where it starts off like real small and then grows. And also you, borrowing from like Scion, where you kind of grow into your powers, or even like Percy Jackson or whatever. It's like you have these little godlings and then they'll grow into their powers.
Right.
And that's the idea. And it could, you know, borrowing from something like The Incredible Hulk is... people figure out what you are, and they're not happy with it. They either want to use you or they want to destroy you.
Right.
So you're some sort of defender of the universe, but right now you're a little bit vulnerable. You got some of the powers, and then powers come to you. So it's a combination of a coming of age, escape story. But again, it's a huge cheat in that you're not big.
Well,
so, but maybe you can become big. You get angry, and then you're going into the Ultraman ideas. You're normally this big, but yeah, when you have a problem, you can be huge.
Yeah, I was thinking like the one you said about kind of growing into your power. I just assumed you would kind of keep growing and getting bigger. In which you kind of know where this is going to end, right? You're just going to keep on growing, and eventually people aren't going to be able to deal with you, and you're going to have to kind of disappear. Which that visible of an ending for the campaign could be nice because it puts a cap on how long the game is going to go. That you can kind of speed up or slow down, you know,
you
depending on how long you want to play. Yeah.
It could also serve as a good time clock, too, because, you know, maybe you have something that you need to do, and you need to do it before you outgrow the ability to do it.
Right, yeah. Right.
But, yeah, again, it might sound like a cheat, but then it also follows a pattern of a typical kaiju movie or kaiju story is that you have a lot of buildup.
Right.
And here you have you build up and you grow, and then there will be that big battle, because we know it's a kaiju story. There's going to be the big battle, and... But then there are other stories that you can tell, just like when you're dealing with the antagonists, you could be dealing with mini monsters, you could be dealing with the escape, you can be dealing with discovery, but still, even as an antagonist, you can do that as well. You don't know what your destiny is, maybe.
Maybe the opposite, though. Maybe you do know your destiny. Maybe I'm picturing some kind of fantasy thing where you're born under the certain sign of the moon or whatever, but you fulfill a prophecy that you are the one who's going to go and defeat the Leviathan.
Okay,
and as part of that, your character just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and you know what the big final battle is going to be. It's going to be versus the Leviathan.
Yeah, no, that's good. I was thinking that you knew that you were different and you were getting bigger, and you start to discover that you're kaiju, but you might not know, well, why am I going to be kaiju? What am I going to fight? So you could have a very explicit prophecy like you're recommending, Chris, where it's like, yeah, you're going to beat Leviathan. It could be slightly opaque in that, okay, but what is Leviathan? Is it really the sea serpent, or it could be something else? Or it could be something even vaguer, where they part of their discovery is try to figure out, what is my role going to be?
And with that much power, how do you stop from becoming the kaiju?
Right.
You guys
saying that. I was thinking of, kind of like a usual science fiction trope where, hey, you know, you start off as a group and your test subjects, your whatever, some of them turn evil.
Or go off
and you're the good ones. And so you know there are others of your kind out there. You know they're going to get big just like you are. And you know that ultimately you're going to end up fighting in this, you know, climactic battle at the end.
Thankfully, the longer it takes, the easier they'll be to find.
True.
But then you want to find them sooner, because and that can be the story. It's a game that scales. I mean, people talk about Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, you want to have a sweet spot at every level. And this is a sweet spot at every level, in that your antagonists are getting bigger as well and getting more powerful as well. So you can fight them at different stages and hunt them at different stages of the story, and it hopefully will be satisfying because you won't know exactly. Maybe the powers manifest themselves a little bit differently in everybody. So you can't 100% predict what you're going to encounter, but you can pretty much expect that it will be have about the same power level as you at each stage of the way.
No,
that's certainly a way to do it. Certainly talking about getting big, it sounds like we're doing a steroid story.
I know. Hey, maybe you are.
Yeah, so Major League Baseball, getting big.
Well, seeing Captain America Super Serum gone wrong.
Yeah. Gotta go lift some trains. Brew.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of Creature Features Kaiju.
Big episode.
that was excellent. Oh, that was fantastic.
So we had a number of different themes that we discussed, and probably too many to really recap at the end, but some of the key ones were you got to think about scale, you got to think about proximity, you got to think of who are the players, and it's probably going to involve the government somehow. What the discovery is going to be, and...
A lot of desperation and running away until you find it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and bridges and trains.
Mini monsters.
Just a little monster.
And Matthew Broderick. All right. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Out of Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, outofredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can plus one us on G+, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or you can join up and talk to us in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums, and are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time. Bye.
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 Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.